Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kean. Today we'll discuss the article by Limburg et al. Titled Breathing Rate and Steady State Hemodynamics. This article published online April 12, 2013. My guests today are Associate Editor Irving Zucker, Lead Author Jerome Dempsey, and Expert Harold Schultz. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara, and thank everybody for joining the podcast. As we know, the regulation of sympathetic nerve activity is a very complex process, especially in disease states. And sympathetic outflow is modulated by a variety of cardiovascular reflexes, by circulating and local hormones, and by intrinsic central rhythms that are established in various areas of the brainstem. The study by Limburg and co-workers that we're going to discuss addressed an important issue of respiratory modulation of sympathetic burst frequency and activity in humans with varying degrees over a relatively wide range of muscle sympathetic nerve activity and blood pressures. Jerry, I wonder if you could briefly discuss the background and the rationale for doing these studies and what the key findings were.
Thank you, Irv. Yes, the background for this was that for some time there's been, I think, agreement on the marked modulatory effect that breathing has on the sympathetic nerve activity within the breath. The question has been, over the past decade especially, does this translate to effects on overall steady state activity or bursts per minute? Two types of studies have been done that have addressed this question. First of all, clinical studies in which breathing frequency was slowed over differing periods of time, acute to several days, a few hours a day. And some found that blood pressure was altered, fell slightly, and some found it didn't. Some had a placebo effect with the effect not greater than the placebo effect. Very few studies have addressed the cardiovascular significance of any observed change in sympathetic activity. The second kind of background data for this were the correlative data in both humans and animals. In heart failure humans, it's seen with a very high frequency, low tidal volume breathing pattern, they see high MSNA, and people have suggested that they're linked. And then in the decerebrate, debuffered rat model, there's a high correlation of within-breath sympathetic nerve activity to hypertension. Our own data many years ago, Seals and Joyner and I, altered breathing frequency and tidal volume over several minutes and found no effect on the minute activity. So the results are certainly not consistent. Our approach was to have subjects, some borderline hypertensive, mostly normal, change their breathing frequency and tidal volume. We measured MSNA and then muscle sympathetic nerve activity, and also forearm blood flow and blood pressure and calculated conductance. We confirmed a very marked within-breath effect of increasing tidal volume on MSNA power, but there was no effect on the steady-state MSNA or vascular conductance. So that was, in essence, our study.
Those data are very clear from the figures in your paper. Harold, it sounds like there's a lot of differences between some of the previous studies carried out in both humans and in animal models. Could you perhaps just amplify on what Jerry said and talk a little bit about the respiratory drive for sympathetic nerve activity and perhaps maybe something about the coupling between respiration and sympathetic nerve activity?
Yes, as Jerry has indicated, there's very good evidence in the literature that the respiratory output and sympathetic output are very much in phase in both humans and animals. The question comes into play whether or not they are modulated by the same degree by changes in either respiratory frequency or depth of breathing. When this question is addressed in the animal models, mainly it's been with the decerebrate debuffered rat brainstem model, can clearly show that there is a respiratory-related sympathetic bursting activity that occurs normally in early expiration, post-inspiratory, which then is amplified in the hypertensive rat model, spontaneous hypertensive rat model, and tends to show a bit of a phase shift toward late inspiration. That, though, doesn't really address the same question that Jerry is asking about whether or not changes in the depth or frequency of breathing affects overall mean activity coming from the sympathetic outflow. So it's difficult to compare, I think, in some ways, because we don't really, in those animal models, have a clear message on what's happening with changes in depth of breathing or in changes in breathing frequency on mean levels of activity in that particular model. I do think that, and I think Jerry would agree that with his studies in humans, that there does appear to be an increase in the amount of sympathetic outflow that occurs with a decrease in breathing frequency. And that is reflected by the increase in the power that occurs in the respiratory frequency component with the slower breathing rate. I think that that's an important point that I think he's trying to make from his paper.
So this begs the question about what the important parameter is in terms of coupling of sympathetic nerve activity to vascular regulation and the implications for hypertension. Is it the frequency or the burst activity within breaths or the mean burst activity? Jerry?
That's a good question, Nerv. I would have thought that it was the minute activity, the overall steady state activity that would matter, that would have a bearing on vascular resistance and blood pressure more than the within breath would. But that's theoretical, of course. I'm not sure that can really be tested.
Harold, any comments?
If I could go back to the cerebrate debuffered rat model that Peyton and his group have shown in some of their studies, is that they correlated the respiratory coupled frequency of sympathetic activity to the troub hearing waves that they saw in their preparation. And they showed that there was a clear correlation with an increase in respiratory sympathetic coupling and an enhancement of the troub hearing wave in blood pressure. And in one of those experiments where they inhibited respiratory sympathetic coupling to a marked degree by inhibiting chemo input with the hyperoxic perfusate, and then slowly instituted regular breathing then by lowering PO2 to reinstate respiratory sympathetic coupling, they saw a progressive increase in troub hearing waves. And those seemed to summate to produce then an increase in mean arterial blood pressure.
Thanks, Harold. Jerry, would you like to conclude with some thoughts on the implications of this study for blood pressure regulation or vascular resistance in heart failure?
I think the question's still open here. I think that the field is misguided here in just concentrating on breathing frequency, which all the clinical studies do. It's the volume effect that we and others have shown that is so important in this, primarily because lung stretch is a major component within breath sympathetic activity. So I think that's one thing that has to be emphasized. The other is that just slowing the breathing pattern, even with a concomitant increases in tidal volume, isn't the way to go because it's not changing steady state activity. I think we should experiment with manipulating different duty cycles, a prolonged inspiratory time and a high tidal volume.
Jerry, what do you think about these major differences between these animal experiments and what you find in human experimentation recording a muscle sympathetic nerve activity with all reflexes intact?
I don't have answers to this. I don't know why this happens, but it's a huge difference. For example, in a debuffered animal, all of this activity is proportional to central respiratory motor output. When we test for that in the human using mechanical ventilation to turn off respiratory motor output, it has no effect at all on MSNA. And this is a huge difference that hasn't been resolved between the debuffered animal model, which is used so often, and the intact human.
Well, thanks, Jerry, and thanks, Harold. I want to thank both of you for participating in the discussion of this very interesting study. Kara, back to you.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast, For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.